Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. In terms of food and nutritional security, 80% of the world's undernourished children live in just 20 countries. The adequate nutrients during pregnancy in the first 2 years of life are especially critical, and damage suffered in early life can have permanent health consequences. You've seen the Feed the Future countries. So hold those countries in mind as you look at under five stunting, which is we define in public health terms as minus two Z scores. Every field has its own jargon. So a Z score is essentially a standard deviation. So a minus two Z score means that we're talking on the World Health Organization growth standards of the third percentile and below. There's an urgent need to address malnutrition, and as you can see, sub-Saharan Africa has not shown the improvements of Asia and South America, so it's an important focus. Globally, child mortality declined by almost one quarter between 1990 and 2006, but that decline in sub-Saharan Africa was very small. So I'd like to talk a little bit about household food insecurity, its impact on dietary intake, on maternal and child undernutrition. There's a household food insecurity scale that's used widely across countries. It assesses different domains. There's common to many cultures, and generally you have increasing severity of food insecurity as you go through these questions. It addresses perceptions of food vulnerability and behavioral responses to that insecurity. So in one question example would be, in the past 4 weeks, did you worry that your household would not have enough food? Now, in truly food insecure countries, we respond differently. They respond differently than we do in the U.S., where people dash to the supermarket if it might be a snowstorm for 2 days. But these are the questions, rarely, sometimes, and often. So the questions, worry about food insecurity through the most severe situation of day and night without sleeping, day and night without eating any food. So these last three then have also been looked at in terms of a household hunger score because of some of the cultural differences there. An Ethiopian postdoc looked at this household food insecurity questions in January of this year, and he surveyed over 1,000 families. I would want to point out this was the Oromia issue of Oromia region of Ethiopia, not the Somalia region where you hear the famine stories. So household food security insecurity was high already. There families were worried about their food security. 44% had occasionally no food to eat. 32% had slept without eating any food. 29% had gone a day and night without eating any food. So household food security, household food insecurity, only about 20% would truly have been defined as secure. Household hunger, which of course is the very severe end of the scale, about 5% in this non-famine situation were at the severe level of household hunger. The World Health Organization's targeted nutritional deficiencies are protein, energy, malnutrition, vitamin A, iodine, iron, and zinc is receiving more attention. Adequate total protein energy intake requires policy. You obviously can't have war. You can't have conflict. Requires sustainable agricultural development. Requires protein energy density sufficient for young children and all the supporting economic factors as well. There are many emergency programs, but as we are learning, this child may, this child will live, but he may never catch up in terms of his development. Approved amino acid balance, you all know this, I'm sure. Lysine limiting in grain, tryptophan in maize, and sulfur containing in the legumes. But both maternal education and plant breeding have roles here. We know that many mothers don't know to mix legumes and grains. And part of this, I think, is a very young population in many of these countries. I was struck, Uganda's 50% are 15 and below. You know, where's the information coming from? Global prevalence of vitamin A deficiency. Night blindness is the first clinically detectable sign of night deficiency. And in pregnant women, that's actually quite high, which means that the fetus is not depositing that store of vitamin A that they might have, nor is the mother's milk going to be adequate in vitamin A. Night blindness in pregnant women, night blindness in preschool children. Now, vitamin A supplementation for under 5 children has been widely promoted, and it certainly has helped to prevent blindness and death in preschool children. SSA is Sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, East Asia, and the Pacific. These programs have been really successful along with immunization programs. However, a more sustainable program is the orange flesh sweet potato emphasis, which is a food-based approach. I heard last week at a meeting the breadfruit being promoted. The breadfruit doesn't have a lot to recommend it nutritionally. It doesn't have to be weeded. But I just thought if a plant breeder could make that orange, you'd have something there. Iodized salt consumption, usually tackled by universal salt iodization, could be dealt with in some cases by fertilizer. You'll see that the Feed the Future countries are here in the serious levels. Iodine deficiency disorders, goiter is what you may see, cretinism, when there is severe iodine deficiency during pregnancy, the expected incidence of cretinism is 1 per 1,000. You can't support that kind of lack of mental development. And so iodine deficiency is very critical and mostly could be fixed by policy. Global anemia prevalence is wide, and it's not only in developing countries. You also have not as severe, but we have it in developed countries as well. Bioavailability of nutrients. I don't know if I can revert. Yeah. Bioavailability of nutrients is a big point where this society can be extremely helpful in supporting the nutrient needs of families. This is a map of zinc. Under 5 mortality by region, this is Middle East, it's really hard to even think of 175 per 1,000 under 5 children dying. And children who are malnourished die much more frequently of diseases like diarrhea, pneumonia, malaria, measles than normally growing children. The public health data is presented as stunning in under 5 children. And certainly the target on under 2 makes sense because of the very rapid brain development at that point, but it could also be expanded to rapidly growing children. Now, nutrition and cognitive function I want to mention very briefly, but several studies have shown impacts of various types of nutritional interventions and of nutritional deprivation on child development, and specifically on cognitive function. And I'd like to acknowledge here my colleagues in collaboration in pediatric psychology and human development. So this is certainly stretching us in nutrition into areas in which we typically hadn't worked. This is brain development over time, a diagram showing the very rapid development in seeing, hearing, receptive language and speech, the higher cortical development coming later, but that a lot of this is encompassed during the first 2 years, making those very important times. So the birth to 2 years is a critical window for promoting growth, health, behavioral development. It's a peak period for growth faltering, for micronutrient deficiencies, and common childhood illnesses such as diarrhea. Complementary feeding is just really critical for infants. They can survive very well on breast milk till about 6 months of age, and by about 9 months, that is no longer sufficient, and that's when they urgently need complementary feeding, and if they do not have it, you would expect a decline in their Z-scores. I will present a little bit of the study of infants and toddlers from Ethiopia, but I think maybe cut that short so we can have some moments for discussion. Stunting became worse as the children moved from this breastfed only 6 to 8 6 month period into older. They actually were meeting their protein intakes. What they weren't meeting, here's their actual intake, here's their estimated need. If there was medium bioavailability, I tossed that out to the plant breeders, and if there was low bioavailability, that's the darker brown bar, and so they were even farther from meeting their needs. Same thing with zinc, so I was delighted to hear about the iron and zinc in wheat increases. In these children, already by 6 and 11 months, they were not, the stunted children were not meeting their motor milestones. We can see differences in alertness and responsiveness in children who are malnourished. In 5-year-old children, there are measures of short-term memory that we look at, number recall, word order, hand movements. Why is that important? Those are skills that you need in school. That's how you learn multiplication tables. That's how you learn language. And already stunted children were less successful in those. Visual processing, another type of cognitive function, also affected clearly by stunting. I want to mention here before I go on that the importance of the global livestock CRISP that persisted through the years in supporting research looking at use of animal source foods in Kenya, and they've done some very nice research. I didn't put those in because this was a plant and soil meeting, but they've done some very, very important things. This is just some work from Jamaica where these effects persisted at 17 and 18 years of age. So challenges, the structure of extension outreach in individual country, mechanisms for stakeholder inputs. Women in general may not be empowered to offer enough opinion. Very often in developing countries, the educational level of women is significantly lower than that of men. Diet diversity, food preferences and beliefs, these are all important. Adult literacy. So adult literacy at 60% in sub-Saharan Africa, and that would be drawn upward for men and downward for women. So that mean is coming from a much lower level in women. Some of the women that we work with, some of the villages that we work with, 90% of the women have never had formal education. This is from Tag Dimmitt. I think it really shows and emphasizes the interconnectedness of this problem. and the excitement of working together on translational research. Let us work together.
Thank you, Dr. Stoker. You certainly addressed this important area of nutrition, particularly for infants and children and so forth. You know, given the time, I think I'm going to adjourn the formal session here in a few minutes after I make a few concluding remarks. But let me say at the outset, after we adjourn, please come forward to visit informally with all of the speakers. I know they'd be delighted to visit with you and so forth. Let me thank all of the speakers. Clearly, they have a lot of passion for their topics. Let me thank a very attentive audience as well. There's certainly been this common theme of the grand challenges that we've talked about all along: hunger, growing population demand, increasing food demand, changing climate, weather extremes, competition for resources, and so forth. Three main research themes or pillars have been consistent all the way through: production, increased productivity, but production systems, sustainable production systems, and then this important last area of nutrition, health, and safety. To feed the future, the U.S. government Feed the Future is focused on specific problems, specific targeted countries, capacity development throughout the world. Certainly, you've heard time and time again the partnerships, governments, university, private sector, foundations, non-NGOs, non-government organizations, international organizations, and so forth. You know, I reflect back on my own career, and I see a lot of 30 and 40-year-old career people in the audience. When we were starting our careers, I certainly did not, and I suspect that's true of you, did not sense the burden of responsibilities looking forward 40 years, but particularly for young investigators over their 30 or 40-year career, they're actually going to see these challenges come to bear, and they have a tremendous burden, but also a tremendous opportunity. And in spite of the sobering statistics and challenges we've heard about, I think there's also a lot of optimism that we can bring together our collective resources, ingenuity on a global basis to address these issues. I hope to be around 40 years from now to actually observe that, but that remains to be seen as well. Well, let me thank USAID in particular for organizing this session. And of course, as I've said, there have been a spark plug for this Feed the Future, the U.S. government Feed the Future initiative, and done an excellent job of bringing together and mobilizing the resources and the partnerships.